ETF. Tiden. In time.
The use of genetically modified crops is still the subject of much debate, both within the scientific community and wider society. Simon and Takeshi have been looking into this and will take us through the background.
Yeah, so just to briefly kind of give an overview of where the situation is today with GM crops, etc. So they were first developed in 1982 by some American scientists, which was the aim was to introduce strains that were resistant to certain diseases that wouldn't spoil so easily, that could, for example, change the nutrient profile so they become healthier. So the idea is that you take some DNA from one organism and insert that into another in order to impart some of the features of that organism. And so since that time, we've had this term genetically modified, which is kind of this, what many would consider unnatural modification of crops or plants.
Yeah, and it's in the unnatural sense of the GMOs that much of the criticism has been, because it's usually from different environmental organizations talking about we don't really know all the risks of what will happen when we release GMO crops into nature. For example, when crops have been genetically modified to kill different pesticides, there has been examples of where the pesticide where it has killed other organisms as well that aren't hurtful for the crops. So the debate kind of it doesn't differ, but the different perspectives have different sides. The environments are thinking about what will happen to nature, and the people that are pro are usually talking about higher efficiency.
It's very much the unknowns that are the main question, because as with any new scientific development, it's very difficult to prove definitively one way or another. There's certainly no way of proving that GM crops are 100% safe 100% of the time, because that's just simply not how science works, and there's no...
And they're also constantly under development.
Exactly.
So there are always new and genetic modifications to be done.
But so the ones that are on the anti-side will therefore use that and say, we can't prove these are safe, so we can't have these in our environment. Whereas the opposite side comes with a viewpoint that so far nothing's been proved to be unsafe, or that it's so strictly regulated that any unsafe elements would have been removed by the time it goes to commercial production.
Yeah, and I think we can see like the different legislations about GMOs also comes a bit from this, because for example in Europe there has been a big skepticism towards trying GMO products within the European Union, and there are basically no genetically modified food to be bought within the European Union, while in the US it has been tried much more because for different reasons, and it is said that about 60 to 70%, it's hard to know exactly, of all the food in the United States have some sort of genetically modified food within it.
Mm-hmm.
By that not said that 60 and 70% of all food in the US is genetically modified, but there are traces of it.
And what that basically means is that if you have ever been to the United States, then you will at some point have consumed something GM. Because another one of these things is that it's not always labelled as such. So I believe that because of the regulations that are in place in the EU, it's very much harder to develop commercially these products, but also that they have to be very strictly labelled as such, so that the consumers have the right to avoid them and to not choose. And there are movements, many who will now put on their labels, even in the US, that openly come out and say, we're free from GM, we're free from GMOs. But that's a very much a voluntary thing that they do, so it's not to do with any regulation. So because of that much less stringent regulation that they have in the US, that's why we come to these figures of 60 to 70% of all that food.
Yeah, but there's also the... another part of this discussion that doesn't so much revolve around nature, but as about how what effect the GMO has on the farmers and the relationship between small-scale farmers and big-scale transnational companies that sell the GMO products, because it's very expensive and it's kind of hard to create GMO products, and they are sometimes made sterile, which means that the farmers have to always buy product from a bigger company that can afford to create these GMOs, while before they could always take seeds from the crops they were growing. Like they save some of the seeds from the crops they're growing and plant them next year. But now they can't do it because the GMO plants, they don't get any seeds from it. They're sterile. So there's also been a somewhat more economic discussion regarding this as well, what effect it has on the agricultural industry.
And it's this idea that I think it's two or three big companies control the vast majority of there are patents on these GM technologies. So basically those who were in the labs and developing them, which for the vast majority are funded by big companies such as Monsanto, for one, is the most well known, they have the financial control over this. So that's another one of the big sticking points when it comes to further development or further acceptance of GM, that actually much of the technology is in the hands of and controlled by these multinationals whose aim is and always will be to make profit. And therefore, if they have this plant that can survive much better and be much more nutritious, then they don't want to sell it to the farmer once. They want to sell it to the farmer every year in eternity, almost.
UPF. Tiden. In time.